Blog Talk Radio.
Of the Heart Wednesday. Welcome to Shock Entertainment Reports. I'm India Morrell, Blog Talk Radio, Dollhouse Radio, herself, a former adult film star, successful businesswoman, and you hear it right there. Great sounding R&B singer, and I love Dollhouse Radio. I haven't been able to listen to her live broadcast recently, but I love her shows. Check her archive shows out too. And speaking of archive shows, thank you for listening to Culture Shock Entertainment Reports live, plus the archive shows. And archive shows are previously recorded shows, and you can check out the profile here at blogtalkradio.com 24/7 anytime and listen to each and every broadcast that's ever aired since the show premiered on March 21st, 2011. So thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you for being with me for a little while, for the entire hour or more, and hopefully Cousin Linda spent the day. Excuse me, and my apologies for the delay of not coming on at 5:30. There was something going on with my computer. You know what I mean. It was just something that was going on. It just wasn't speeding up. I like to have everything all prepared and everything, but it was early, and it was just taking a while to get everything right, so I had to reschedule for 6:30, but definitely here at 5:30 a.m. tomorrow morning, and we'll be talking about beauty and fashion industry careers and jobs, and also on Friday, you know what Friday is? Sports Friday edition of Culture Shock Entertainment Reports, and it's airing at 11 a.m., and if I'm not solo, Rich Ruffin will be with me, and hopefully one or two more, and hopefully some of you will call in. I'm tempted to invite someone to come in. A surprise, so I don't know. Might have a surprise, maybe not. We'll see. And, of course, Saturday is the return of True God Immortal, which we'll be discussing his life, what's going on, what's new in his life, and, of course, his new album, which just dropped on July the 7th, and also you can hear him here on blogtalkradio.com. Also, he is the co-host of Wrestling Heads, and also he will be starting his very own show also, so he is a busy, busy artist, producer, independent filmmaker, is he not? But, you know, kicking it off, I'm going to kick this off, and then I'm going to zoom on to the switchboard and chat room, because my cousin Linda or some of you might, you know, I love it when you all call, and now we have more time to talk. Please call in and share your perspective regarding what is it, what does it mean really, really, really to be truly happy? Single or not, truly happy. You know, I think it's important to already be a happy person before you get another person involved. But then also, I think other people are instrumental also in assisting you in becoming a happier person also. So it's real important. I don't know, thank God, praise God for people that have reached out to me, you know. And I talk about people, celebs and non-celebs, well-known to not well-known people, family member to non-family members, people who treat me like family. I talk about those people who reach out to me. Wow. And there are people that, you know, but it's really important to have that happiness from within. This is my opinion. I really am a happy-go-lucky person, but I am definitely working on becoming more healthier and more money. I definitely need more money, which would definitely help, you know. Money doesn't bring happiness, but it makes you feel better, it you know. And good health, number one, good health. Like Diana Ross said during her Oprah interview about a year ago, what is it if you don't have your good health? You're no good to yourself or no one else. But it is also good when you have people in your life when you're not feeling good, when you're feeling under the weather, who assist you in feeling better and recovering and also becoming happier. I'm just, you know, sharing a little bit. I'd definitely be happy when I'm finally legally single, when I drop the pounds that I need to drop. And I know I'll definitely be happier then, but I am a happy-go-lucky person. I truly am happy. I truly do feel happiness within myself. And when and if I am blessed again to become romantically involved with anyone, seriously, I think I am a better person now. I have learned a lot about myself, you know, really. And I am, I've always been a patient person, but I'm a more tolerant person to other people also. So, you know, go figure. But I ran across a lot of interesting articles and research and just we deal with happiness every day. We deal with sadness and depression also, and being mad and pissed off too, don't we? But the topic is about what is it, what does it really mean to truly be happy? And that doesn't mean you're 100% happy, because we're human. We're no robots. We go through emotions. Because somebody is happy doesn't mean they do not experience sad moments, mad moments, in-between moments, you know. But it's, what is important is to be happy and to seek happiness. Like I mentioned yesterday doing a broadcast, the midday broadcast, and talking with my cousin Linda and you all, I know Tony Robbins is an inspiration to me in regards to being encouraged and to really see, to learning the teachings of being a happy person. Number one, your holy book, regardless whatever your religious faith is, number one, your holy book and your faith. You know, the Holy Bible, God, my belief in life. But then there are my atheist friends out there, just believing and being happy and what motivates you and what drives you to be happy. But there's so many sad people and so many depressed people, and we all go through those sad moments also, but it's all about what is the key to true happiness. And in my research, and also right before the show, I seen a article which I hope to get to. Oh, true happiness versus temporary fixes. Because we can be truly happy, but then we can also be temporarily fixed. Also, we can, you know, happy for a moment or do something. But it's good to do things that make us happy, you know. But then there are temporary fixes, things that make us happy for the time being. Doesn't last long at all. but then there's the true happiness. And I can honestly say I have, like, this peace within me, and I have not always been able to say this. I've always been a happy-go-lucky person. Ever since I was born and brought into this world, always been happy-go-lucky. But I have not always had, like, this certain peace within me, a certain happiness that's from within. So I know what temporary fixes are, too. Temporary fixes can be from things that you do, from people that you like being with, putting all your happiness onto certain things, people, places, and then when those things are over, you know, sometimes it can be in relationships, and when that relationship is over, they're over, you know? And pretty much, I mean, I just, the failure of my second marriage, I guess my life went into a darkness. Many of you know this. And it went into a darkness. It was, both my marriages was brief. But, you know, it was not just the failure of that marriage, but things just went on a whirlwind downhill. I mean, different things in my life. And, you know, and in my family, you know, most of my family members that are married, like uncles and aunts and so on, they have successful marriages. You know, been married a long time. You know, there are divorces. I've been divorced before. There are divorces in my family. But then either people are strictly single or have, you know, maybe been married or divorced once, or uncles and aunts and so on have been, they stay married until death do us part. So that is like being, that was like a failure. No, again, I failed again, you know. So that was like a whirlwind of different things and so on. Even though I remained stable and a happy person, that, you know, that and other things make me sad, you know. And so, as I was still legally married, too. So, you know, I always wanted to have kids because I had a son that died at birth, right after birth, when I was 19. So there are things that have me sad, but there are things that keep me encouraged, my business endeavors and just loving friends and having a great support system and great business contacts. And appreciating life itself. You know, I really am believing what some people do say, you can't have it all. And I'm beginning to believe that. And I think I've said this before, and I've seen people go through this, people that have lost nearly everything. You know, people that have lost everything. I have not become homeless, and I pray not to, please God. But, you know, I do believe people can have it all. A late former boyfriend of mine, he used to say, and many of you that know who I'm talking about, he used to always say, you can have it all. You know, even on his voice messages, he would say, you can have it all. And I would hear other people, and even though I've always been into positive thinking and, you know, gurus like, you know, Tony Robbins and prosperity preachers and so on, and just people that inspire, I've in the back of my head, like, yeah, sure, you can have it all. You might not have it all in different parts of your life, but no way you can have it all. But you do see people who, in their opinion, they have it all, either living it up single, you know, good career, good job, money, happy family, happy friends, living it up, you know, married, either no kids or with kids, whatever their goals are. So that's a happy thing. So I am believing that you can have it all, whatever your goal is, the right education, the right job. Sometimes things, God has different plans than we have plans for ourselves, but you can have it all, that good life. I do believe that we can be happy regardless of what we're going through, regardless of what the economy is, regardless of, we can be happy. It's up to us, it's up to those that are around us, not the naysayers and the ones, like some of my friends say, haters, are those that beat us down and belittle us. That doesn't help us achieve happiness. And so that's how we have to have the guts to stand up for ourselves and get out of the presence or ignore the negative things. And that is sometimes hard to do. It's easier said than done. I know this. and this is just me talking right now, but I didn't mean to talk that long, but I want to talk about this article right quick and then check into the switchboard in the chat room. And I hope you all are calling to share your perspective. We have more than 30, 45 minutes to talk. Show is scheduled for 60 minutes, but we can extend it longer than that. So if you call in, you will not be cut off, because I want to hear your perspective regarding truly how to achieve being truly happy. Are you truly happy? Share your secrets. Might not be secrets. Sometimes people say just live your life simply. Some people are eccentric, you know. I know one thing, the one way I have achieved my happiness, I must admit, you know, I've always been a simple girl, but I've also been superficial. You know, love and beauty and fashion and nice things, I have been superficial. But one thing I have learned also in the past decade is I've become very humble. And by being more humble has taught me how to truly find that happiness inside of me and to really not be afraid to find out who I truly am and even to discover who I am from even checking out my flaws, you know, what I don't like about myself. You know, when people perceive us a certain way and don't like certain things about us, yeah. But figuring out what I really like about myself and what I really don't like about myself, that all play a part in how happy I am. I'm only speaking for myself right now. And, you know, I've heard some people talk the same way. But, you know, do I really like myself? Yeah, you know, there are some ways that I don't like about myself. There are some ways I have seen that I didn't like about myself, and I definitely worked on them and changed them, you know, and not because of what other people told me, but what was revealed to me by me, you know, about myself. And, yeah, you know, I used to be a skinny mini, but I put on some pounds. But if I had to do it all over again, I mean, I don't want to risk my health, but maybe that self-discovery, maybe putting on extra pounds at some, you know, I needed to gain weight. I didn't need to get overweight. But that might have had something to do with, I talk about emotional eating. I never considered myself an emotional eater, but that might have been part of my case, been emotional eating, since I've been going through emotional situations, personally and professionally, you know. I was accustomed to being very successful, you know, and professionally, and also successful personally, because I had two failed marriages. I mean, that I'm a romantic, so I consider myself being a good, true romantic. But, you know, enough about me, but people like to know things and ask questions openly and privately, and honestly, I don't have anything to hide. I honestly don't, and I'd rather just speak the truth as bad as it might hurt than I'll let rumors fly around about me. You know what I'm saying? But I found this in Reader's Digest, an article from way back in March 2004, and it's about 10 keys to true happiness. The best part is well within your reach. And it's an article written by Bob Holmes, and he talks about how researchers have really studied this, about how to find the 10 keys to true happiness. And it goes like this, and I really don't want to read like the whole article, but it's from Reader's Digest, and it's about the 10 keys to true happiness. Better living through science is possible. Over the last 70 years or so, researchers have been probing happy and unhappy people, and they finally zero in on the factors that make a difference. What follows are the top 10. By the way, the experts think your genes account for about 50% of your disposition. The other 9 factors make up the rest. 1, wealth. Money can buy a degree of happiness, but once you can afford to feed, clothe, and house yourself, each extra dollar makes less and less difference. Whenever and wherever they look, scientists find that, on average, wealthier people are happier. But the link between money and happiness is complicated. In the past half century, average income has skyrocketed in the industrialized countries, yet happiness levels have remained stagnant. Once your basic needs are met, exactly, if basic needs are met, I'm cool. You know what I'm saying? Basic needs are met. Money only seems to boost happiness. But if you have more than your friends, neighbors, and colleagues, it's all about status, and status makes people feel better. So it's all about that feeling. Says Andrew Oswald, an economist at Work University in Coventry, England. This helps explain why people who can seek status in other ways, scientists or actors, for example, may happily accept relatively poorly paid jobs. Who is desire? How much stuff do you need to feel good? In the 1980s, political scientist Alex McCullough, professor emeritus at the University of Northern British Columbia in Prince George, asked 18,000 college students in 39 countries to rate their happiness on a numeric scale. Then he asked them how close they were to having all they wanted. He found that people whose aspirations, not just for money, but for friends, family, job, health, the words, soared furthest beyond what they already had, tended to be less happy than those who perceived a smaller gap. Indeed, the size of the gap predicted happiness about 5 times better than income alone. The gap measures just blow away the absolute measures of income, says McCullough. The aspiration gap might explain why most people fail to get much happier as their salaries rise. Instead of satisfying our desires, most of us merely want more. In surveys by the Roper Polling Organization over the last 2 decades, Americans were asked to list the material possessions they thought important to the good life. You know, Prince had a song called A Good Life. The researchers found that more of these good people already had, the longer their list was. Good life remained always just out of reach. You know, in other words, the good life is always kind of like grandiose. We all aim that way. I think most of us aim for the good life, if it's a basic good life or a bigger-than-life good life. 3, intelligence. Only a few surveys have examined whether smart people are happier, but they indicate intelligence has no effect. That seems surprising at first, since brighter people often earn more and the rich tend to be happier. Some research, but I know a lot of people who live simple lives that are so happy. Back to their needs are being met and they are able to do things within their community, so they're happy. I've noticed that people that really have good causes seem to be happy people also. That's me talking. Some researchers speculate that brighter people could have higher expectations and thus be dissatisfied with anything less than the highest achievements. Or maybe scoring high on an IQ test, which means you know a lot of vocabulary and can retain things in your mind, doesn't have a lot to do with your ability to get along well with people. This Ed Diner, a psychologist at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, he speculates that social intelligence could be the real key to happiness. And then it goes into genetics. And I do believe that genetics play a major part in people that are happy, because we all see it. Sometimes we just see people that are related that are just happy people. You know, and sometimes we see people where it's kind of obvious that a sadness or depression is a culprit within within them, you know. I mean, this is an example of genetics that I'm mentioning. But that's just me. That's me talking. This is not the article. Are some people born happy or unhappy? David Licken, a behavior geneticist and professor emeritus of psychology at the University of Minnesota in Minneapolis, believes our feelings of well-being at any moment is determined half by what is going on in our lives at that time and half by set point of happiness, which is up to 90% genetically determined and to which we eventually return after dramatic events. While our happiness set point is largely determined by a gene, says Licken, whether we bounce along above it or slump under it depends on our parents' good sense and good training. Licken found that genetic variation accounted for between 44 and 55% of the difference in happiness levels. Neither income, marital status, religion, or education accounted for any more than about 3%. Wow. But whether you trudge through life on the low side of your set point or skip along on the high side is up to you. And many studies have shown that extroverts tend to be happier than most people and a lot happier than introverts. What do you think, you all, extroverts and introverts? I am a balance of both, to be honest. I love being an extrovert, but then also comfortable being, a balanced person, being alone and doing things alone. I don't go crazy if I'm alone or if I do things alone. But I'm definitely an introvert also because I love people and I love socializing and networking and so on. So they said that, again, I repeat that, many studies have shown that introverts tend to be happier than most people and a lot happier than introverts. And that probably comes from the external, because they already have it internally. But then when you're out amongst the people, smiles are contagious, and so you become happier. And research has found that putting people in a good mood makes them more sociable. Michael Cunningham at the University of Louisville in Kentucky showed that people were more talkative and open with others after watching a happy film than after watching a sad one. Theoretically, even someone with a low set point can boost his or her outlook. Yeah, I believe that, because sad films can leave you quiet anyway, thinking. And next is number 5, beauty. And first, the bad news. Good-looking people really are happier. When data got people to rate their own looks, there was a small but positive effect of physical attractiveness on subjective well-being. Perhaps the explanation is that life is kinder to the beautiful, or could be more subtle than that. The most attractive faces are highly symmetrical, and there is evidence that symmetry reflects good genes and a healthy immune system. So perhaps beautiful people are happier because they are healthier. You may be able to cash in on beauty's emotional high even if you aren't gorgeous. If you believe you look great, unfortunately, studies show that women tend to think they are too fat and may worry about being puny. And but there are some beautiful people out there that are so sad. They're so sad, but there are some beautiful people that are just beautiful on the inside and beautiful on the outside. But then there are some people that are so handsome, so good-looking, so beautiful, and yet they are so sad and depressed. Some people don't even realize how good-looking they are. I mean, sometimes you compliment good-looking people, and sometimes they don't understand why people think they're so good-looking or why they're so beautiful, so handsome. And then there are some people who you cannot tell them that they're not. I really don't call anybody unattractive, but to me, everybody has some kind of beauty, regardless of their looks. But I know some people who tell people, let people know, well, you're not that attractive. But there are some people that may not be the best looking, but they are just a bowl of sunshine, and they just bring it on everybody else. And, you always see it. How did she get him? How did he get her? Out of all these good-looking guys, all these good-looking chicks, how did that person get that person? It's all about that happiness factor. The happiness from within and how they make that person in their life happy, too. Sometimes it's not all about that, but shout out to all the good-looking high guys out there that are beautiful on the inside and outside. You know who you are, and they're beautiful people. But let's see. 6 is friendship, and it is hard to imagine a more pitiful existence than life on the streets of Calcutta or in one of its slums or making a living there as a prostitute. Yet despite the poverty and squalor they face, people with these lives are much happier than you might imagine. Donna interviewed 83 people from these 3 groups and measured their life satisfaction using a scale for which a score of 2 is considered neutral. Overall, they averaged 1.93, not great but credible, compared with a control group of middle-class students in the city who scored 2.43. And the slum dwellers who were happiest of the 3 disadvantaged groups scored 2.23, which is not significantly different from the score the students had. We think social relationships are partly responsible. So, all about happiness. It's cool. It's okay to be an introvert. It's okay to be a loner. But what I'm seeing and what you're probably hearing just from this article alone is a whole lot of information, and more information that I share online also for you, is that it's important to upgrade your social life, your social world. And it's not doing stuff big. It could be volunteering and, you know, volunteering at, like, for your favorite causes. It could be, you know, if that's the way you can get around other people outside of your work or if you're retired. I mean, girl, I think there's a lot of retirees, especially here in the city of Jackson, that they work not because of a financial reason, but they work because they like to interact with other people, and they like to make other people smile. They like to make customers smile. And so even some teams, even though someone's trying to go back to school, I mean, even some teams that are out for the summertime, instead of being bored, you know, do other things, volunteer, get a summer job, just do things that so you can interact with others and upgrade your social life, you know, pretty much. Because, you know, I'm working back. One while my life was too social. I was too much of a socialite. But it's not about just being out there and being and just always going places, but just having a interacting with others in a good way, in a positive way. That's what I'm reading, and that's what I'm seeing, and that's what they're saying, is that we think social relationships are partly responsible to the diner, and so on. And next is, he points out that all three deprived groups got high satisfaction ratings in specific areas, such as family, 2.5, and friends, 2.4. Slum dwellers did particularly well, perhaps because they are mostly likely to be able to cash in on the social support that arises from the importance of the extended family in the Indian culture. Indian culture is always coming up in my research. 7, marriage. In an analysis of reports from 42 countries, shout out to my Indian friends. We have a high population of Indians here in the city of Jackson. And I have many friends from my past and present life. Indian, but I'm just amazed that Indian culture keeps coming up. Sometimes when certain things keep appearing in your life, it's something going on. Marriage, in an analysis of reports from 42 countries, this is number 7. So we have number 8, 9, 10 to go, and then going on to the switchboard and chat room. But this was maybe spark some of you to call in to discuss your own perspective and your own experience regarding happiness. In analysis of reports from 42 countries, U.S. researchers found that married people are consistently happy than singletons. Okay, this is what I was talking about. Are you truly happy, single or not? And they're saying that they found that married people are consistently happier than singletons. The effect is small, but that still begs the question, does marriage make you happy? My married listeners, does it? I mean, both times I was married, I was happy at the beginning. I guess my new husbands were too at the beginning. But those of you that have been married for a long, long time, through thick and thin, I mean, does marriage really make you happy? Good relationships make you happy. I've been in some great relationships, and they definitely made me happy. You know, the sad part is the breakup parts, but the commitment is definitely a happy time. But they ask, does marriage make you happy? Or are happy people simply more likely to get married? That's the second part. Are happy people simply more likely to get married? I hope you're not in depression and then get married. Both times that I got married, I was happy. I was a happy person. I was happy at the times that I met both the guys that I married. And so not so happy at the end, but I was generally a happy person both times that I met the guys and dated the guys, and then, you know, their proposals came and then married. I was pretty much a happy person, but, you know, does marriage make you happy, or are happy people simply more likely to get married? Both answers may be true. In a study that followed more than 30,000 Germans for 15 years, Danner and his colleagues found that happy people are more likely to get married and then stay married, but anyone can improve his or her mood by getting married. The effect begins about a year before the happy day and lasts for at least a year afterward. For most people, satisfaction levels do return to their baseline, but the researchers say this conceals the fact that a good marriage can have a permanent positive effect. Furthermore, people who are less happy to begin with will get a bigger boost from marriage. And, you know, we have met people that they're in on love, newly dating somebody or newly engaged or newly married, and, you know, I'm like, wow, you seem like such a much more happier person now. Well, I've also met friends who are newly divorced, and they seem like much happier people also. But honestly, when I see people, I'm a romantic, so when I see people that it's obvious they're in love, they just seem like new people, you know, or just like, wow. And it seems there's something special about signing that piece of paper. The research shows that you all just wait till I am legally divorced. I mean, because I'm so stressed from being legally married, y'all. I know you all can feel it, you can hear it, and those of you to be around me, you can see it. I am definitely stressed from being legally married for all these years. And so all the happiness that people get from signing the paper, and then I was so happy when we did get married, but I'm going to be so happy, so ecstatic. Oh, my God. Really, I just pray every day for that day to come so soon. I know what's taking so long. I know. And because that's one concern that I have, you know, for those people that are supporting and praying with me about considering running for city council person. My concern for being legally married is one of my concerns, you know. And I definitely want to pass my physical annual exam. But being legally single will definitely boost my happiness. You know, I just feel that things would definitely fall back into place, and the future would just be remarkable, praying to see a long life. You know, honestly, this is me talking. I'm just sharing my aspect on happiness. But it seems there's something special about signing that piece of paper. The research shows, and when I could take that divorce decree into the DMV, you know, wow, I would be just ecstatic. But the research shows that you can't get as much benefit from simply cohabitating. My hunch is that cohabiting couples lack the deeper security that comes from an informal band of gold, and that is why they are not quite so happy. I don't know. I see a lot of couples that shack up that are happy, but I know what he's saying. I know I'm a big supporter of the Constitution, an institution of marriage, but, you know, it seems like there's some happy common law, cohabitating couples out there, but they're not as happy as those that are legally married, says Oswald. Insecurity, we know from all data, is bad for human beings. So let me hurry up and do these 8, 9, and 10 and share a couple more websites with you. And I hope that some calls are on the switchboard waiting to share their experiences with happiness and share their tips and secrets to being happy. Overall, true happiness, not quick fixes. Quick fixes are good, though. You know, they're better than nothing. That's me talking. Faith. Karl Marx was fairly close to the mark when he described religion as an opiate for the masses. Of the dozens of studies that have looked at religion and happiness, the vast majority have found a positive link. Believing in an afterlife can give people meaning and purpose and reduce the feeling of being alone in the world, says Harold G. Cohen at Duke University Medical Center in Durham, North Carolina. Especially as people get older, you really see the effect in times of stress. Religious belief can be a very powerful way of coping with adversity. Religion also brings social interaction and support, but Cohen believes it is not just about receiving. Studies have shown that people who provide support to others are better off themselves. They even live longer. This research agree makes religious involvement a source of greater satisfaction than other socially inclusive activities and such as book groups. Charity, I mentioned this earlier. Servant behaviors have found a link between happiness and altruistic behavior. But as with many behavior traits, it is not always clear whether doing good makes you feel good or whether happy people are more likely to be altruistic. James Conow, an economist at Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles tried to tease apart cause and effect in a lab experiment. He recruited subjects to answer questionnaires and toward the end of the session gave half of them $10 and a half, nothing. He then told the subjects who had been paid that they could share their money with those who hadn't been compensated. Konow found that the happier students were overall, the more likely they were to share the money. However, being in a happy mood on the day of the test did not make them any more generous, and students who gave did not report any immediate increase in happiness. In fact, they were slightly less happy. Excuse me. But those who shared their money were more likely to show the personality traits of a self-actualizer. They were concerned with their own personal growth and improvement. Konow thinks that while a single act of generosity did not make his subject happier, the cumulative effects of being a generous person did. I've been trying to sip my water and stuff. And now we're at number 10, age. Old age may not be so bad. Given all the problems of aging, how could the elderly be more satisfied? As Laura Cardison, a psychology professor at Stanford University in California. In one study, Cardison gave pages to, this was 2004, to 184 people between the ages of 18 and 94 and paged them five times a day for a week, asking them to fill out an emotions questionnaire each time. Old people reported positive emotions just as often as young people, but they reported negative emotions much less frequently. Why are old people happier? I have friends of all ages, and my young friends are happy people. My older friends are happy people. Why are old people happier? Some scientists suggest older people may expect life to be harder and learn to live with it. Are they more realistic about their goals? Only certain ones that they know they can achieve. Ricardison thinks that with time running out, older people have learned to focus on things that make them happy and let go of those that don't. And that is good for people of all ages. Not to focus on what is good and what is healthy for you and what makes you happy and those around you. People realize that not only what they have, but also that they have cannot last forever. He says a goodbye kiss to a spouse at the age of 85, for example, may elicit far more complex emotional responses than a similar kiss to a spouse at age 20. And nowadays, I mean, really, kisses at any age. Because you never know when it's time to go meet the maker are important. So that's why it's important for all of us to really appreciate those in our lives and so on. But I'm looking at what is true happiness at a website called To Know Myself, and they talk about true happiness and how important it is to be confident. And what true happiness versus temporary fixes. Why do you sometimes feel happy for a few days and feel bad the rest of the month? Why do you spend a few hours feeling good then remain sad the rest of the day? Why do happy feelings fade away quickly? You know, he says that the author, M. Farouk Radon. The answer to all these questions lies in one concept. If happiness fades away quickly, then it wasn't real happiness. But it was the excitement that resulted from a temporary fix that you were using to mask your real emotions. And as hard as it may feel, as bad as you don't want to find out your real self, it is so important to experience self-discovery. I'm saying this from experience. And you go through those moments where, oh, my God, you know, when you really realize and see the truth of yourself, the ugly and the not so ugly, the beautiful and the not so beautiful, your good features and your flaws. When you go through self-exploration and self-discovery of oneself, and then you become to really love yourself. And therefore, by loving yourself properly, that enables us all to love others properly and unconditionally. This is me talking. But back to what Dr. Farouk was saying, happiness fades away quickly, then it wasn't real happiness, but it was just the excitement that resulted from a temporary fix that you were using to mask your real emotions. Traveling somewhere, smoking, all kinds of addiction, doing something new, spending time online, spending time with friends, or playing a game, or all kinds of temporary fixes that can help you really feel happy for hours or days, but they really never result in long-term happiness. So what is true happiness, he asks. If you lack self-confidence, then most likely the following situations are going to make you feel real bad. When you're rejected, rejection, criticism, jealousy, and anything that reminds you of your low self-esteem. If you are emotionally sensitive, then most probably you will feel really bad whenever someone criticizes or hurts you. If you deal with such problems using temporary fixes, then you would never experience true happiness. True happiness comes when you cure these wounds. You are living with in such a way that you feel happy without the need of a temporary fix. The only way to become truly happy is to go on a quest for healing your inner wounds and fulfilling your unmet needs. And unmet needs and happiness, if you are living with an unmet goal, for example, he says, then you might not experience the true happiness before you achieve it. Unmet needs are the same as emotional wounds. They make us unhappy all the time and prevent us from achieving true happiness until we fulfill them. If you have dreams that you never fulfill, goals that you've never achieved, or unmet needs that you've never met, then you can never experience true happiness. If I, this is what Dr. Farag said, were to give a universal definition for happiness, it would be a state where all of your unmet needs have been met. And I say amen. True happiness cannot be achieved through philosophies, positive thinking, affirmations, mindfulness, and all of these nice very fixes and mind-deceiving techniques. He asked if affirmations really work. I do believe affirmations do work. He goes on and on and on and talks about the certain emotional wounds and books that he has written also. There's a book, The Ultimate Guide to Getting Over Depression and Mood Swings and Bad Moods and many other books. And so visit the website to know myself and you would see more about that. And on my Facebook page, you know, we've been talking a lot about Scientology. And the other day when there was breaking news on Good Afternoon America, when they were talking about Tomcat had settled their divorce, I ran out to my mailbox and what was in there, a letter from the Church of Scientology. I respect different religions, and I was exposed first to Ron L. Hubbard's books when I was a teen, and really read the books a lot when I was at Hines Community College. And one thing I like about Scientology is they teach you how to be truly, truly happy. You know, never attended a church in person, so on. But one thing that I like about the teachers of Scientology is they teach you basic concepts of being a happy person, a true happy person, from within, and clearing your mind of unnecessary garbage, pretty much. So I just wanted to mention that, you know. And also, a special day today here in Jackson, Mississippi, while I'm transitioning into the switchboard. Today, City of Jackson, Democrat Mayor Harvey Johnson will be presenting the State of the City Address today at the Jackson Medical Mall. That will be in Center Court, and that is 350 West Woodrow Wilson Drive. And you can visit our website here in Jackson, the government, you know, City Hall website, and it's Jackson, Mississippi, JACKSONMS.gov. And you can visit many of our media outlets online also, where you probably can see footage of the State of the City Address. I'm not going. I should have decided to go. I was almost going to go to another event this morning, and I guess I would have been going to two events today. I have errands and stuff to run, but I'm saying it's going to be raining, and I have a lot of work to do. But also, this morning, this is courtesy of the Madison County GOP Mississippi Facebook group that I am in, and this is presented by Julia Hodges. There is an event scheduled this morning called the Mississippi Health Insurance Advisory Board, and it will be from 9:30 to 12 noon. And so if you're planning to go to the State of the City Address, you have to leave there a little early. And It would be at room 145 of the Woolfolk Office Building at 501 Northwest Street. And what is it about? It is, the why is, it is a meeting discussing to oppose the implementation in Mississippi of Obamacare's health insurance exchange component. So that event would be starting at 9:30 to 12, and this afternoon would be the City of Jackson's Mayor Harvey Johnson Jr.'s State of the City address at the Jackson Medical Mall here in Jackson. It would be in Center Court, and that is 350 West Woodrow Wilson Drive. And those of you that aren't in Jackson, check out the website, jacksonmississippi.gov. Okay? So, yeah. So, pretty much. I don't know if Cousin Linda is... I'm checking emails, because I didn't know if anybody was sending something. Cousin Linda was sending me an email. I don't know if she realized that I'm on air, because I've been on air at 5:30. And I tried to email her to let her know that it will be starting at 6:30, but like I told you, it was something going on with my computer, so that's why I was unable to email her. So I'm telling her I'm on air right now. Yeah. So, please excuse me. She's like sending me an email that my niece, video that my niece was sharing about Elmo, my niece Dietra, who's also in Dallas, and some other emails. Cousin Linda always share interesting emails. Ah, and since this is Matters of the Heart Wednesday, Camelia Alves, I'm looking at an email from my daily, and they're talking about Camelia, Matthew McConaughey's new wife and longtime love. She's showing off her baby bump in a tiny leopard dress at the Magic Mike London premiere. So this is, I'll post this and share this. So that's cute. Beautiful, beautiful couple. Love, love, love. Camelia Alves showing off her baby bump at the Magic Mike premiere. And I know Matthew keeps her laughing, and she keeps him laughing also. Just an awesome couple. They're expecting their third child. So congrats to them. Carson Daly's love is also expecting. They're expecting their second child. So we have like babies galore. We may have splits and breakups happening, but we have engagements and new marriages and baby bumps galore everywhere. And so haven't heard any more news regarding Usher's stepson. Is he still brain dead, or has a miracle happened? We're praying for that miracle, aren't we? That's very sad. I was going to post that picture of Matthew and his love and her baby bump showing. But congrats to them. Happy, happy couple. Yeah, here it is. Camilla Evans. Right now I am trying to put it on Twitter and Facebook. At the European premiere of Magic Mike in London, having announced that they were expecting their third child together just last week, Camilla Evans was proudly showing off her growing baby bump at the London premiere of Matthew's latest film, Magic Mike, last night. And we set Anna Miller named her baby. But I don't see the baby's name. Many of you might know. But you all know by now that Courtney Scott's baby name is Penelope Scotland. So, okay. I need to head onto the switchboard because I don't want any of these even up if you're waiting. But I thought that was good to mention. They're out and about looking good together. I'm tweeting it. At Twitter, I'm Beth Wims, BTHWMS, and Culture Shock Inc., KULTRESHOKENT. And those of you that love Mark, Beth Mark Girl, BTHMARKGRL. So I just tweeted out a picture of Camellia Evans showing off her baby bump in a tiny leopard dress, and she looks very nice, like always. And of course, her husband looks fantastic. So sharing that with you all. Just tweeted it, and I don't like to be redundant, but I'm putting it on Facebook also. And I've created a new Facebook page. But you all like Cluster Shock Entertainment Report's fan page also. So it's on my fan Facebook page. If you are a friend with me, you will see that. So I reached 35,000 friend limit the other night, so thank you. It's been a blast. Created a new page, as a continuation of that page. But you can like the fan page. And those of you that like Mark can also bring me at my Mark page also. So, Cousin Linda says she's on hold. So, I don't know. So I'm letting her know I'm on my way. My way. I guess she can hear me if she's on hold. She can hear the show also. I did not know that was going to take more time, but had to share that basic information. That was a very interesting article from Reader's Digest. And I'm on my way right now. And yesterday we were talking about the DIYs, a show that here on Blog Talk Radio that is like one of the most popular shows on Blog Talk Radio is on Down and Dirty with Frank Fontana. That is like one of the hot do-it-yourself shows here. And so they're on Down and Dirty with Frank Fontana, and he interviews people from all walks of life on his show, but he is a DIY expert and a great show. So that show was on the tip of my tongue yesterday when I was mentioning all the numerous DIY shows here on Blog Talk Radio. But check out that show. I mean, it's like the hottest, not only one of the hottest DIY show, but it's like one of the most popular and hottest shows here on blogtalkradio.com, really. So I'm headed my way to the switchboard. Cousin Linda's in. I hope many more of you in. Many of you used to call when it was only 30 minutes, and I love hearing your perspective in regards to love. Shout out to my friend Rain Man, Clifton Clancy, longtime friend, internationally known local art rep artist, producer, multi-talented gent. Shout out to Phoebe. Okay. Hello, Cousin Linda.
Good morning, Cousin Bethany.
How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I got up at 5:45. I thought I had missed part of the show when I got the message saying you'd start broadcasting at 6:30. So I've been on hold since 6:30.
Thank you. Yeah, something was happening where I didn't start at 5:30, and I was trying to email you, but something was, you know how sometimes the computers are. They have them out of their home. So
yes,
I quickly rescheduled to 6:30, and I said, wow. I said, well, I didn't get a chance to email. I had hoped you would call in, then you would hear it say, well, the next show starts in an hour.
Yeah, you know? It'll tell you what time. It won't tell you exactly what time. It'll say what the length of time is, like 16 hours and 22
yeah.
minutes.
Yeah, so I had started standing in the switchboard at the beginning of the show, and the morning that I didn't go in the switchboard room, the morning you've been on hold since 6:30, because I have been staying in the switchboard room for at least 30 minutes before leaving off of it, and so I should have known at the time that I'm not in the switchboard room, you or somebody else had called in.
Yeah, it always happens like that.
Yeah, and I decided to check emails right quick while on air to see what new information I had to share. And I see where you were sending me some funny emails. See, cousin, my niece Deetra had even been sending you some funny stuff.
Well, actually, I get her emails from her Facebook update. Well, I get Facebook updates from her. She's not communicating directly with me for some reason. Whenever she does something on Facebook, I get an email.
Okay.
And I got that Elmo thing, which I thought was kind of cute and funny. And it was on CBS News this morning too, because I have the TV on CBS this morning, and they mentioned that.
I didn't get a chance to view it. What was it about?
It's Elmo doing, I think LMFAO or whoever has this video, I'm Sexy and I Know It or whatever. And Elmo is doing it's a YouTube video. I don't know if, yeah, one is Tickle Me Elmo, and then Cookie Monster has one too.
I love that group. I love that crazy group from Miami. Those guys are hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Sesame Street is doing parodies of those videos.
Oh my God! And that group was on Good Morning America last Friday, and I told Mom that I was like, that group is really a group of adults because they're all about the party lifestyle in Miami. I said, but the kids are going crazy over those guys.
Mm-hmm. Well, I started liking them from the Kia commercials because I didn't know it was actually a group.
And
I saw them on some TV show being interviewed, and then, of course, it they did the dance and everything. And I was like, wow, that is actually a group. I didn't know it.
And that's so funny.
I went to YouTube and found the video and started sending it out to everybody. They weren't as excited as I was.
I love them. Like a year and a half ago when I first seen the video of them in the party bus, I was like, who are these guys?
Mm-hmm.
But they are crazy. And so speaking of the topic of happiness, they are definitely happy. And they bring happiness and smiles to all of us because they're so crazy. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You first see, wow, is this really a group? And
mm-hmm.
and they really can sing and rap too. What's ironic?
Mm-hmm. I think one of the guys said that Berry Gordy was his daddy. So I don't know how true that is. The guy with the huge afro.
Yeah.
Yeah, he said Berry Gordy was his daddy. So I don't know.
Well, they definitely bring happiness to us.
Yeah, they do. They do.
If it's a quick fix or not. So
yeah, it's a quick fix. Because what makes me happy is being on YouTube, listening to songs that were popular when I was a kid up through my teenage years.
Mm.
And, that makes me happy.
What are some of your favorites?
Some of the old songs that I like?
Yes.
Love Makes the World Go Round by Deion Jackson. Say It's All Right by J.J. Jackson. I've been doing so many old ones until I can't think of them just offhand.
Yeah.
But I love Gene Chandler. Oh, last night I got on a Supremes kick. I did a lot of songs by Diana Ross and the Supremes.
Oh,
I even
yes.
found one of Michael Jackson's last songs, Girl, You Rock My World.
Ah!
I love that video with him and Chris Tucker. But I really like to go back and listen to the old songs, like Smoke Gets in Your Eyes and I Only Have Eyes for You. Stuff, like I said, that was popular when I was a child and a teenager. So I thank goodness for YouTube, because all that music to me would have been lost forever. I have a large vinyl collection, but nowhere near the compilation of music that's on YouTube.
Exactly. YouTube is just amazing. And I know you do, even though, you know, Prince can do no wrong with my book, but if looking for those, like, rare Prince tunes, check out some of Prince's, like, past
music. Well, you know, I told you, I tried to do Prince, but it wouldn't play.
Wow.
And you told me that Prince didn't allow his music to be played on YouTube. Because, I got into a Prince.
He is strict about certain music. So I email you some. He is strict about some of his music, too, being played if it's not coming strictly from his camp or some of his people.
I will, search for a song, and if I can't remember the title or the artist, if I just type in maybe some of the lyrics, then it will populate, and I'm like, oh, that's it, I had the title wrong or I had the artist wrong. So the way they've set it up is really, really good.
Yeah, I agree with you. I love that setup where you can just, you don't have to, like, key in, because I'm the kind of person sometimes I think I need to, like, key in on, like, a whole sentence. But you just key in the, like, important words, and ta-da.
Yeah, and then they'll have selections for you to choose from as well. And I used to send these videos to just about everybody on my email buddy list, but I wasn't getting any response. But then my friend William in Jackson and my friend Marshall in Chicago told me how much they really enjoy them. And so to keep sending them, so I send them to them every day. Sometimes I'll send two songs, sometimes four songs, you know. And Marshall always critiques them. Marshall doesn't like the blues, and I'm a big blues fan, and he'll, send me a little happy face and say, you sneak a blues in on me. And, I'll tell him, well, sometimes you have to listen to the blues because those songs are not always depressing.
Exactly, and listening to the blues makes me happy. And when I was a little girl one time, Cousin Stanley's our cousin Doris is one of her brothers. Cousin Stanley, I remember Cousin Stanley. Yeah, I was telling the listeners. The listeners would be like, wait a second, who's Stanley?
Oh, okay.
And, like, who's Stanley? You know, they want to know.
Okay.
Who brother is that? Cousin Stanley, I remember him saying when I was a little girl, now you can listen to the blues, but don't get the blues. But listening to the blues makes me happy.
Me too. I love the blues. I remember when I was when I first turned 18 and was able to drink beer legally in Jackson, I went out and bought a six pack and I was playing the blues when my mother came in from work. And she was like, darling, do you have the blues? And I said, no. And she said, were you listening to the blues and drinking beer? I didn't know the two went together. And then after she, asked me that, drinking. I was like, you listen to the blues and drink beer. Okay, that's a great combination.
But that's a happy combination.
Yeah, it is. So, and I still do that to this day. Occasionally, I'll get a taste for an ice cold brewski, and come over here to YouTube and put on a list of blues and just enjoy myself.
Exactly, and I'm glad you mentioned beer. And I was going to mention beer earlier and sipping a little sip step, because that definitely has brought happiness to me. Might have been temporary fixes, but sipping a little beer and little wine or a nice cocktail, it's a good little happiness. But I'm glad you mentioned beer. Cause what's the name of that beer? We still, have you found, is it Arbita?
No, I can't find it. Arbita, I went online and everything. I just couldn't find it. And
okay, I have been looking for it for you, and I haven't gone right around the corner for some reason. I have a feeling that this liquor store around the corner has it. And I have been looking for it. I even asked my sister, Beverly, you know, you may ask your cousin if she had heard of it. She hadn't even heard of it. She said she doesn't like Mexican beer.
Oh, Arbita is Mexican?
I didn't think it was. Is it Mexican? I told her it was made in Louisiana.
I think so.
I said it's made in Louisiana.
Yeah, I thought it was an American beer. But yeah, I have a friend in Jackson, rather, and I had him looking for me as well, and he said he couldn't find it either. So I guess maybe as soon as the truck arrives and puts it on the shelves, it's gone. I don't know.
Yeah, but I don't think it's Mexican either. It's just seasonal, and it's made in Louisiana.
Right.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. I think it's the kind of fruit. It's some kind of fruit or something.
Yeah, strawberries, I believe.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm still checking on it, but for some reason, I think it's at this liquor store right around the corner.
Okay.
And so I'm gonna make it my business to go in there before the end of the week, because I've looked and haven't seen it yet. But in the listeners, if you're familiar with Arbita, let Cousin Linda and I know. Oh, where we can get it.
Exactly.
It's a seasonal beer, so it probably be out of season like September.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh, because, yeah, so it's just a seasonal beer, so it's a late spring, summertime beer.
Yeah, I like all different kinds of beers, especially Korean beer and Jamaican beer, and some imported beers, when I go out to Whole Foods, I'll just grab one, you know, like from Germany or Austria or something like that, European beers. And they're pretty good. But my favorite of all times was Jack's beer out of Louisiana.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they quit making it or what, but I just never, ever see Jack's beer.
That's a good point. It just vanished out of the air.
Mm-hmm. But that was some good beer.
It's
amazing,
Jack.
You know, what little things make you happy. As far
exactly.
as happiness itself, I don't think there is anything as a long-term state of happiness. It's kind of like it goes in succession, I guess. It's like, well, when I get this, I'll be happy. And then you get that, and you're happy temporarily. And then the next step is, well, when I do so-and-so and so, because I look at my life, I look forward to graduating the sixth grade. I couldn't wait to go to Lanier. And then I wanted to graduate high school so I could be an adult. And then, you know, when I graduate from Jackson State, then I'll be able to quit the phone company. I graduated from Jackson State, quit the phone company, got married. And none of these things had sustaining or continuous happiness. It's like, you know, they're the highs and the lows or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So is there an overall state of happiness?
I don't think so, because you mentioned people with money, and I was reading an article online this morning where some billionaire heiress in London was found murdered. And they think her husband is a suspect, and there were drugs found in the home, and they had been arrested before for drug possession, but, you know, they got like a slight, they didn't even get a slap on the wrist. It was just, you know, just totally dismissed or whatever. And you look at these celebrities. I mean, look at Tomcat, who'd have thunk it?
I know.
Yeah, and I don't know. I just don't think sheer happiness exists.
And it's good you mentioned that, because Tomcat, I mean, and just a few days ago, once again, every year he's the number one Hollywood highest paid actor. I mean, he's number one highest paid actor, seems to have everything in the world. And we know, I mentioned Scientology earlier, his faith keeps him grounded, and he's a grounded, stable-headed guy. But I wonder if it's true. He said he was blindsided. He honestly didn't see this coming. You know, even though he left his first and second wife, and for some reason, I mean, I love Katie Holmes. I love Tomcat the couple, but I understand she wanted to get out of it. But for some reason, I feel for Tom. You know, he has everything, but then, oh, he just lost
the
love.
Can you imagine? Yeah, I mean, the way it happened, it would be something different if they had been feuding publicly and he had some inkling, but on your 50th birthday, that only happens once in a lifetime. And
exactly.
He was this mega, mega movie star, millionaire many times over, married to a gorgeous young woman, beautiful daughter, and you get divorce. Paper served on your 50th birthday. So, and you know that they would be happy with all the trappings, you know, the material trappings that they have.
Wow. So that's, wow. I mean, I feel for both, and I understand what if she wanted her freedom, but yeah, but you see a person that, what you said, a person that has everything, and we know he's brokenhearted right now.
He has to be.
Wow.
So, you know, and then we look at the fashion world. I can see him on right now. The guy that used to design for John Galliano, the Dior designer.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, one day he's on top of the world designing clothes for Christian Dior, the house of Christian Dior, and then he makes a foolish statement and is fired immediately from that fabulous job. So,
exactly.
You know.
So that was a heartbreak.
Yeah. So it's not always, you know, in love and romance that things hurt you. It can be any number of things.
Exactly.
And take our President Obama, our first Black American president, who you would think would just be riding a wave of euphoria constantly, but some of the vicious, hateful comments.
I believe he's truly a happy person. It's obvious that Obama is a truly happy person from within.
Well, yeah, but, you know, when you see stuff like that, that can really hurt you and bring you down, but you have to keep going.
Exactly.
And all I'm saying is, yeah, you know, things that you think is just going to make you happy and then you achieve them, like Oprah got her network. And
but
it has been a cakewalk.
But then, the past couple months, you know, they had to let go of so many people. Oprah even got demoted from being over, like, everything. So you know that was sad and disappointing for her.
Mm-hmm. So this thing about happy, I guess it's something that comes and goes.
But I'm glad you mentioned President Obama, though. He's a good example because I honestly believe that he and Michelle are happy people individually, and they are definitely happy as a couple and a family. So that is a good example. Because I do believe they are truly happy.
I believe so, too.
And back to what you were saying, they go through so much from highs and lows. And they're human. They have personal lives, too, stuff that we don't even know about.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, even though they are happy with each other and their daughters and family and everything, but when you see how people have no respect for you and you hold the highest office in the land and you're trying to do the right thing, and then you've got people who hate you for just the fact that you're Black or you're different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you have to deal with it, even though you can say, well, it's like water on a duck's back. I don't pay attention to it. You can't help but pay attention to it. You know, you're not going to be loved by everybody. That would be foolish to think that. But, you know, when people hurt your feelings, you are human, and you experience, I mean, me as in a customer service representative, when I would get customers who would curse me out and call me names and everything, I had been taught, like, back in the 60s during the beginning of my career, you can't take it personally. You don't know these people. They don't know you. And then people that I trained, I would tell them the same thing. When you get an irate customer, you can't take it personally. You can't help but take it personally. You know, it's like here I am trying to help this person, and then they call me out my name. They're shouting at me, and then I'm trying to adhere to company policy. You know, I didn't make this policy. The people in charge have set up these guidelines, you know, that the customer has to adhere to. And so, yeah, I couldn't help but take it personally. You know, you calling me all out of my name. And then, of course, you had people who hadn't paid their bills and still expect service and that sort of thing. And then they curse you out and you want to curse them back. And you can't.
You've been wanting to say F
with
you.
Your stress. Yeah, oh, that's funny.
Don't so badly want to say F you, F you, F you. My old former manager and longtime friend, Sandra Petro, shout out to Sandra. She reminds me of a time during a holiday season when we were working in Mitchell Center Mall at the merry-go-round store, which was coming attractions then, DJs and so on. She said that she reminded me of this time, this customer during a holiday season was just trying to test me. And just going off on me and cussing me out. The store was packed, lines of customers, holiday time, you know, stores closed everywhere, trying to watch for shoplifters, just trying to make people happy. People are happy because it's Christmas time. And she was like, you kept telling the lady, God bless you. God bless you. Because, Cousin London, I guess I was trying not to just go off.
Mm-hmm.
And, and I kept saying, God bless you.
Mm-hmm.
So she was like, you kept saying, telling her, God bless you, God bless you. She said, I was just cracking up because I really was wanting to say, F you, F you, F you.
Amen. That's good. But, you know, now if you mention God in some places, that's grounds for termination. You can't even say, you know, because one lady lost her job. It was on national TV some years ago because she would tell customers, have a blessed day. And she got fired from that job because you're not supposed to make any reference to religion. And I know I had applied for a part-time job here in Dallas one time, and it was with one of the banks. And they were taking applications for credit cards. And when the people would call in, you know, you get the information and everything. So, but anyway, the lady that I was sitting with told me it was slow that night, and she said, and you know why it's slow, don't you? And I said, no. And she said, Wednesday night. And I said, I still don't understand. What's different about Wednesday night? Why would it be slow? So she wrote down on a piece of paper, she said, prayer meeting night. People are at church at prayer meeting. And I had to ask her, well, why did you have to write that down? Why couldn't you just tell me? The bank wouldn't allow them to make references to church or religion. And I knew then that was not some place that I wanted to work.
You got to be kidding me.
Ooh. No, I'm not kidding either. You couldn't make any kind of reference or about religion or church. That was grounds for dismissal. And, you know, church and religion and stuff makes a lot of people happy.
Exactly.
Yeah,
wow.
And
a few weeks ago, Attorney Jay on Facebook, Attorney Jay, I don't know if you're Facebook friends with my Attorney Jay in Dallas or not, but he's a high-powered attorney, but he is a comedian. But also he's very spiritual, and he likes to post scriptures. A few Sundays ago, he tried to post a scripture, and he got a warning from the Facebook people that offends people. A scripture from the Bible.
Oh, well, you've got all these different religions and sects and cults and what have you. You know, that's why we can't pray in school anymore, is because the atheist Madeline Murray O'Hare did not like the idea of having her children be subjected to prayer in school because she was atheist, and that was violating her rights, not to mention she was in a real teensy-weensy minority. But we can no longer pray in school. But I think we prayed in school and read scripture and sang spirituals up until, I know, 1966 when I graduated from high school. But we were breaking the law.
Wow. And that's amazing.
Yeah, I think that's other people's religious beliefs.
And lack thereof, if you're atheist, because you see, sometimes I remind people, because I know you know a lot of atheists, and I know a lot of atheists, and I know a lot of atheists listen to the show, and atheists are happy people too. You know,
mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I try not to exclude, because atheists, you know, they share their perspective and views of life without imposing on us, the believers. You know.
Yeah, I don't criticize people for their beliefs. Now, once upon a time, I thought Christianity was the only correct religion in the world, because that's the way I was brought up. But then as I began studying Islam and Judaism and Buddhism, I didn't go extensively into Buddhism like I did Judaism and Islam, but I could see good in all other religions. And, yes, and if you're an atheist, that's your business. You know, it shouldn't be for me to say that you're wrong.
Exactly. Exactly. They just want proof. They're like, prove
mm-hmm.
to me it's God. When miracles happen every day. But, you know, I hope brother-in-law Tommy doesn't get mad at me. But, maybe he has changed, but he considers himself an atheist. And one thing he
mm-hmm.
says, I think because of different reasons, I say from the death of Diane to different reasons. But, you know, I won't even use him as an example. Some people say, well, why did a God allowed this to happen to certain people? Well, why would a God allow stuff like that to happen? For example, like Oklahoma City bombing, 9/11. Sometimes atheists think, like, well, how could a God, if a God is this, how could things like that happen?
Well, the answer to that is God gave man free will. And I learned that at a very young age. It's like, would you want God to interfere in your life? Now, you are given choices, and you can make the decision to do whatever you want to do. It's like some people say it's a sin to drink beer, to drink wine, and, you know, we know it's illegal to smoke crack.
It might make you sin, but it's...
But wait a minute. No, let me finish. You know, we know it's illegal to smoke crack or shoot heroin or whatever. But now let's say that's what you want to do. Would you want God, every time you got ready to do something, would you want God to come down and grab your hand and say, no, you're not going to do that? Or if you want to divorce this husband and marry another husband, some people believe that divorce is a sin and it's unforgivable. Do you want God to come down and say, no, you cannot divorce that person? You're married to this person, to death do you part. No, he's not going to do that. He gives us free will. He didn't tell Timothy McVeigh to go bomb the Murrah building in Oklahoma.
Exactly.
I mean, it would have been nice if we could stop tragedies from occurring, but this is man doing this of his own volition.
Good point. I'm glad I shut my mouth up so you can make your point. Yeah, that's a good point. It's a lot of people who are listening to that. That's a good point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the free will of man.
The free will.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point right there.
Yeah, that's why things occur. And then they talk about the weather. Why does God allow, you know, disasters to occur? They'll say man didn't have anything to do with phenomenon like tsunamis and earthquakes or whatever. That's just something that's going to happen.
Well, we haven't listened to this, but I'm glad you mentioned the different religions because Tiger Woods, one of my favorite people, not just one of my favorite athletes, but people, you know, after his experience and during that experience that he had gone through, you know, he returned back to Buddhism, you
mm-hmm.
know. And, you know, he fought that. He said, I had stepped away from my religious belief, my upbringing, the way I was raised. He said, and now that I returned, you know, returned to it, I feel better.
Mm-hmm.
And I believed him, and it's obvious that it's true, you know.
Yeah, I think religion gives comfort to a lot of people. I know a lot of times it does me. And I'm not a person who attends church every Sunday, or I don't go to synagogue on Friday night or Saturday afternoon, but I certainly do study scriptures and Torah.
Exactly, and I thank the Lord every second, every morning, every night that I'm here.
I thank God for simple stuff like, you know, if I go to the bathroom or if I have a meal, just little bitty stuff.
Exactly. You tickled me, which wasn't funny, about 2 months ago when the tornado was in the area. You were like, you were praying to the Lord.
Oh, baby, yes. I even pray for stuff like, you know, people on airplanes and on boats and in traveling or whatever, you know, please protect them from all harm, keep them safe, family, friend, whoever. I pray for everybody. People
me
don't
too.
Even know it. And, you know, and people have told me they prayed for me, and I didn't even know it, which I really appreciate. I appreciate all prayer.
I do, too. So we appreciate your prayers, everyone. Cousin Linda and I really appreciate you all for spending time with us, and much love. Tomorrow we'll be in the morning, 8 a.m. again, Friday at 11, everyone and Cousin Linda. I don't know if I sent you your email, so you know we'll be talking jobs in beauty and fashion and customer service. So,
oh, okay.
Tomorrow, so we can talk about that, because it works on both, you know, on both ends. The jobs, but then also as consumers, we know pretty much some people shouldn't be dealing with customers or dealing with people one-on-one, but then there are jobs where people can be writers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, everybody's not meant to work with people. Sometimes people can work alone, because sometimes some people say, well, I don't like being around a lot of people. So it's a different types of jobs that people can work in and different careers that they can go into in the beauty and fashion and, you know, sales and customer service. Talk about those topics tomorrow. And I had heard earlier that Ralph Lauren, that for the Olympics, that's starting on the 27th, that the athletes will be wearing designs by Ralph Lauren. Have you heard about that?
Yeah, I saw that online.
Yeah, so I didn't hear about it until this morning. I had not heard about it before this morning. Like, that's awesome. The nice berets and the nice suits.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we'll be talking about fashion news also tomorrow.
Yeah, well, I'm not commenting because you said you only had 2 minutes, so I didn't want to go over your time.
I had 2 minutes, but for some reason, it's still going on. We have more than 2 minutes because I came on air at 6:30, didn't I?
Yes.
So we have about 28 minutes.
Oh, okay.
So continue. So if you have time, if you want to have a little bit more time to talk a little bit more, we can continue talking.
Okay. Well, I haven't received my morning phone call, so I'll talk and up until I get that, because it comes sometime between 8 and 9 o'clock. I never know which time. That's why I have to get off the phone.
I see
it's at 8:02. Huh?
That was good yesterday when I had to tell your Parisian friends goodbye, and you said something in French.
Yeah, I said, au revoir, mes amis, en Paris. I think I was trying to say goodbye, friends in Paris.
Yeah, I thought that's what you said.
Yeah, my friends in Paris.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I had a chance to tell you. I think I did mention that American Airlines had a real, real inexpensive fare to Paris, but I didn't jump on it.
Yeah, you mentioned it yesterday.
Yeah.
Did you contact your traveling companion?
No, I didn't even bother to call her.
But you mentioned, when you mentioned the fashion examples, I thought about Steve McQueen. Fashion designer on top of his game.
Alexander McQueen.
Steve McQueen
was in fashion.
About 2 months ago, you and I were talking about Ellie McGraw and Steve McQueen. Remember?
Yeah.
Alexander McQueen on top. I was in shock when he committed suicide. I'm a person that's usually not in shock when I hear about sometimes people committing suicide. But this guy was on top of his game. Had Lady Gaga, who was number one everywhere, wearing his fashion.
Had someone that he was in love with. He was in a loving relationship.
Exactly.
But they say he was depressed after his mother died.
Exactly. His mother had only been dead like a little under a year, I think. Yeah. So
right. Yeah. I thought he was on top of the world because I always loved his fashions, just loved them. And he was such an excellent tailor. Nobody could tailor like him, in my opinion.
Yeah. So that's a whole nother example, too, about happiness and what is truly happiness. But he missed his mom, so, wow.
I mean, different people grieve differently. And I know when I had to put little cousin Henri to sleep, I really did some grieving. I mean, serious grieving. But I don't think there ever came a time when I considered suicide. And I tell you, somebody else who I didn't know, you may not know Phyllis Hyman, the singer.
Oh, I remember Phyllis Hyman, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I just couldn't imagine why she would want to commit suicide. But then here in, you know, my later years in my life, I kind of understand because, you know, like, if you're accustomed to doing things, you know, you're on top of the world, you're happy, you're in a good relationship, and then if that's suddenly taken away from you and you don't think that you have any out, or say if you are terminally ill and you're in constant excruciating pain,
mm-hmm.
Who knows how you would actually, it's easy to look from the other side and say, well, I think I would still want to go on. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah,
yeah.
I always thought suicide wasn't an option, but then, you know, you have to look at it from the other person's perspective.
But then I always heard that was the ultimate sin, too, but that's going back to, I don't know if it's true or not.
No. Well, that's what we were taught in Christianity, that that was the unforgivable sin.
Mm-hmm.
But from studying different religions and Judaism especially, I've been taught that suicide is not the ultimate unforgivable sin.
Is there an unforgivable sin?
Yes, according to what you believe.
It's taking another's life, you know, like,
well,
like a heinous crime.
Now,
self-defense,
what I've been taught is that God will forgive you of anything if you ask for forgiveness and repent. And even if you do commit suicide, you know, we believe in the afterlife and judgment and that you will be given a chance to accept the Messiah, whoever you believe that to be. But some religions teach that the unforgivable sin is to actually pronounce the name of God.
Mm.
He has what is called an ineffable name.
Mm.
And if you say that, that's supposed to be unforgivable. Jews, I think it's Orthodox Jews, will not pronounce God's name. They'll, you know, write the letters or something like that. And some Jews even, they won't even spell G-O-D. When they write it, they'll write G-D.
Wow.
Some people believe, it was another thing that I forgot what I was going to say, what the unforgivable, blasphemy was supposed to be the unforgivable sin.
That's something that my prince used to get accused of in his early days. And Madonna, most definitely in the mid-80s when they started the parental advisory stuff. You know, when Tipper Gore and all of them started protesting against certain singers.
Yeah.
So, prince and Madonna and many others on the top of that list. But I know prince.
Yeah, and blasphemy. Yeah, but blasphemy to some people is saying that Jesus was saying that Mary is not the mother of Jesus.
Uh-huh.
That was the form of blasphemy. So, you know, when you're talking about unforgivable sins, it just depends on who you're getting your information from because everybody has a different opinion.
They used to say, well, how could he mix religion? But Prince grew up in a religious home, going in church. And so they used to say, well, how can he blend all this these religious lyrics and scriptures in his songs, and then he talk about all types of sex in the same song. So they was like,
yeah.
That is blasphemy.
Well, I don't consider it blasphemy, but it is hard for me to understand certain things, because I was listening to Minister Louis Farrakhan of the Nation of Islam, and he was critiquing a lot of the rap artists who have some of the worst lyrics, especially the way they degrade women and then the profanity that they use. And he said when they accept an award, the first thing they want to say is, "I want to thank the Lord Jesus Christ." I kind of agree with Minister Farrakhan on that one. How can you say you want to thank the Lord Jesus Christ when you just got through talking about women? Like, oh my God, they're the worst things that were put on the earth, and how you disrespect women.
So I guess now I do understand why Chris, since, you know, he is a devout Jehovah's Witness now, how he is and always been a believer in God and Jesus Christ. He won't do any of, like, the songs that he was getting in trouble about. He doesn't do those songs nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I've had friends who are Jehovah's Witnesses. Huh?
You can't what?
No, I just said I have friends who are Jehovah's Witnesses, or I've had friends in the past who are Witnesses.
Yeah, so friends like Tom Cruise is a high-profile Scientologist. Well, many celebrities are Scientologists, but Prince is like one of the high-profile Jehovah's Witnesses out there.
Yeah, well, you know, the Jacksons were Jehovah's Witnesses, or are Jehovah's Witnesses as well.
Mother Catherine and Joe Jackson, they still practice it. And Ribby, I know. I'm not sure about Jackie. Jackie probably still study it in Marlon. But, you know, Janet and Mike and LaCorey, I think they pretty much had stopped.
Well, Michael was supposed to be devout because they criticized him for doing that Pepsi commercial when he didn't even drink Pepsi. I think Jehovah's Witnesses, at that time they were saying Jehovah's Witnesses didn't drink cola drinks, so I don't know how true that is or not.
Yeah. Wow. I do like the Watchtower, and I like talking with my Jehovah's Witness friends. Yeah. So back to what you and I said, we respect different faiths and religions and so on. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, so that's a good point. I never really noticed that. I guess it's something about the I read some information about sodas yesterday. I weaned myself on sodas this year, and I read some information. I posted like a Mountain Dew article on my page yesterday where what sodas do to people, and especially kids. Like, they use an example like Mountain Dew, nickname kids that they know drink a lot of Mountain Dew, or how their mouths are just ruined. They call them some kind of nickname. They can tell a Mountain Dew kid in a second because of the acids and the other stuff that's in sodas. And I don't know if their mouths are yellow, green, or I don't know what.
I used to like Mountain Dew when it first came out. I drank a lot of them, as a matter of fact. But I found out years ago that soft drinks would make me gain weight. And
I found out that it makes you bloat. And I'm like,
They're just empty calories. And I didn't really care for them. It's just that I had a friend who used to love to drink soft drinks. Every meal she had a Coca-Cola, and then on break time she was drinking Coke. So I picked up the habit from her. I'd drink maybe two a day. And then I got a real bad kidney infection, and I thought I was going to die. I had to go to the emergency room. So that broke me up from soft drinks. And it was years later before I would drink one because I was afraid to. And then when I did, I had gotten older, and I started drinking them. And I noticed I was putting on weight. And because I was a pretty much healthy eater, and I said, it's something that I'm incorporating in my diet that's causing me to put on these extra pounds. And so when I stopped the soft drinks, then I realized that's what it was.
One of your few guilty pleasures.
Yeah.
You found out the soft drinks.
Exactly.
Wow. So happiness. So happiness can be true. But you're saying it can be consistent, but the level of happiness we're always seeking.
Well, like I said, you know, it seems like you have peaks and valleys. You're happy that you, let's just say you won an Olympic gold medal.
Uh-huh.
And as much as I love Michael Phelps, what made him decide to go out and smoke a bong or whatever it's called?
I don't know.
You know, risk your career, your livelihood, your adoration. I'm glad he's back on top. But what in the world would make him do something like that?
Exactly. I'm glad you mentioned something like that. Charlie Sheen. I would love to talk to
mm-hmm.
him about this topic of happiness. You know, what really makes you tickle? He seems like a happy person. But back to what you were saying, you know, he just did things in his private life that made him even more happy. They might have been temporary fixes, but he sounds like a genuinely
yeah.
happy person. So what keeps you, because any other actor that had gone through what he had gone through the past couple of years, probably, you know, I don't know what would have happened in rehab
well,
or something. So
well, okay, let's just say, you know, you're married. You're married to a gorgeous woman like Denise Richards, who's one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen. Even
thank
though
God
I don't
her.
Like,
what a friend.
Well, you know, well, I'm angry with her because I still feel that she stole what's her name's husband, Heather Locklear. Yeah, I still think she stole Heather Locklear's husband. But Denise Richards is very beautiful. And being married to her and having a hit TV show, you know, coming from a wonderful father, what in the world happened to Charlie Sheen?
And I love his family. I love his dad. I love his dad, his brother, and his work,
mm-hmm.
too. And mom, oh, my God, he can't do no wrong to mom. In mom eyes.
Right.
But that was just a stage he went through to mama.
Yeah, so you think, you know, these people who would appear to us to have everything, but yet and still, it seems like something is lacking in their lives, and we don't know what. Because I always say, if I had $1 million, I'd be happy. I can do everything I want to do with $1 million. I don't need anything else. So
uh-huh.
I buy lotto tickets, you know, trying to get that $1 million. But I don't know, you know, after $1 million, I might not be happy. But right now I'm still thinking if I get $1 million, I'll be happy.
Yeah, I'd be happy. Yeah, I can do things that you need to do, can help people that need to be helped, you know.
Exactly. Yeah.
But then we see people with that, and they're like, oh, my goodness, I'm so bored, or what's next? But when Jennifer Hudson won Oscars?
American Idol? Oh, yeah, the Oscar.
She won, like, all three awards that anybody in the music, entertainment, acting arenas would want to win. Like, okay. Well, I'm like, okay, how can she compete for herself on that?
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's being a working actress and a great singer, and I guess looking at her personal life, look like her personal life is pretty good too. But then, oh my God! But then look what happened to her family.
Exactly.
She was on top of the world, and then that happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So wow! So that is a good point. I'm thinking about when she won those awards. Just, she won a Grammy, she won an Oscar, and she won another one. I guess the Golden Globe.
That's usually what they are, Golden Globe, Oscar.
The awards that people work their entire lives to win. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I was like, wow, what's next? I guess her goal would be just to be consistent in her work. She's already won everything at the beginning. But then she had this well-balanced life, and then that happened. Oh, my God. So many of your family members murdered by someone who's supposed to be
a deranged lunatic.
Yeah, someone that's close to your family? Oh, my God.
Well, let's look at your favorite person to talk about, and I'm being facetious, O.J. Simpson.
Okay.
I know you want to interview him and everything, but
his birthday
was
on. His birthday was Monday. He was on what?
Once Upon a Time, he was on top of the world, and look at where he is now. Now,
exactly.
I don't understand his rage. I can understand him being upset and pissed off, if I'm allowed to say that.
Yes.
But OJ, and you know, he may have been right when he was in Las Vegas. Those people had his merchandise, and he was trying to get what rightfully belonged to him, but was it worth it?
Exactly. I mean, he had a second chance. I mean, I never share my opinion regarding what happened in '93, and I definitely wish that the killers would be called. I don't know if OJ did that or didn't, but he had a second chance at life, and he seemed to be was getting back popular at the time that the Las Vegas incident happened. He was back popular, going, you know, pretty much popular, more popular than I thought he would be.
Yeah.
He's always been one of my favorite childhood sports heroes, and I even though he wasn't the best actor, I loved him as a actor and public figure. But I don't know what happened to OJ. How he get caught up in that when he was kind of back on a just being a celebrity type track? There are people that were wanting to meet him and meeting up with him at these conventions and wanting his autograph and so on. So he was being admired by people. And I don't understand that either, Cousin Linda. I know that was his stuff that people, or these people, collectors, love, but they knew better than that. I don't know what they were thinking.
I don't either. There, to me, was a better way to get what, like I said, was rightfully his, in my opinion.
Yes.
But rather than going up, and especially with his reputation and knowing that the people were out to get him, so to speak, just waiting for him to make a mistake. And to me, it's like he fell into the trap.
Yeah, because to me, I don't like to say setup, but to me, it looked like that was a setup. And
well,
apparently,
it does.
The gentleman that owned the memorabilia store, the reason they met in a hotel because the man that ran the collectible store, he told those guys, no way, I'm not going to let y'all do this here at my store. So that's why they was in the hotel room, you know, because they couldn't meet at the legitimate business. Because I guess that store owner that, deal with people who like to buy collectibles, he was like, I guess he could smell that was not right and seem right.
Right.
So that's why he was in the hotel room. And it seemed like OJ, I know he wanted his stuff back, like he told him, but he used the SAT word, didn't he? I know he wanted his stuff
and
back.
ML.
Yeah, they used all kind of words. And then his friends had weapons on them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. Allegedly. I don't know what they were thinking.
Yeah.
He should have known. I'm going to get in trouble if I go in here.
Logically thinking, you would think that it would have occurred to him if people have weapons and then they're going to go and try to shake down somebody with weapons. I don't care if it is your stuff. You know, when you bring in weapons, that really kind of draws the line right there. Anything could have happened. They could have been killed. He could have killed somebody.
Yeah, and it's not like he, you know, I never really shared my opinion regarding what I think of what happened to Nicole and Ron. I wish the killers would be called, but I don't. He doesn't have the best reputation in that arena.
Exactly.
So, why would you? Oh my God! It's not even a thought.
If it were me, exonerated in a murder rap, I think I'd be walking on cracked eggshells, trying to just make sure everything I did was on the up and up.
And he should have contacted his attorney and sent his attorney. He should have said, well, I'll send somebody there. Thank you. He should have told his friend, thank you for letting me know where my collectibles are, because I sure have been wanting to find them. Because, you know, it happens to the Jacksons all the time, too. People steal their items to sell. And he should have sent his attorney in there. Because just as an everyday person, if I experience something like that, I'm going to they contact my attorney, Jay, and other attorney friends also and tell them, hey, y'all, somebody has these scenes of mine, and let's get them back in a legal way. It seemed like
right.
OJ would have liked that.
Well, I guess he started thinking he was invincible. He was getting away with everything else.
He was in the Heisman Trophy frame of mind, I guess, winner. I pulled up some old OJ stuff on his birthday Monday, and I'm glad I didn't, you know, I pulled back some of his USC days and, like, old articles when he won his Heisman Trophy, and then when he was inducted into the Hall of Fame, a football Hall of Fame also. You know, mm-hmm. That's the OJ that I remember, you know, so.
And the sad thing is that he's in prison, you know, in the declining years of his life. This is a time when he really needs to be out of prison. Prison is not good for older people.
Yeah. He's in prison. His birthday is 65, turned 65 on Monday. And what, how many years did he get? 30 years?
30 to life, I think. It's an unusually long sentence.
That's what makes you think, too. That was a setup. That was some kind of way to
get. Yeah, because I think the minimum was like, I think his minimum was 9 to 30 on one count, maybe. But I think he had a couple of counts or something. And the judge really threw the book at him.
You know, I'm not a naive person, but you know my naive persona, Cousin Linda. But and so I'm not quick to say setup, but that looked like a setup.
It did.
You know, because a quick way to get him in the slammer for many, many years.
Exactly, and in that state. Now maybe other states would have had lighter sentences, but when all that was going on, and I was watching like court TV and Nancy Grace and place and shows like that. They were saying that Las Vegas had some of the harshest laws for the state of Nevada, yeah, as far as those crimes that he committed.
Well, that,
they had some of the stiffest sentences. Mm-hmm.
Well, I feel for the average person, the average Joe.
Oh, yeah.
They are just forgotten about then. I know, I think I heard a couple of days ago his attorney was still trying to get an appeal for him. And I know Reg Ruffneck had told me about a reporter over there had been investigating did he really commit the crime, you know, back in the 90s. So they've been like opening that case up too because, you know, I remember, I didn't have a companion back then, but I remember when people assumed that's one reason why he hired Johnny Cochran because it was a possibility that he was set up, you know.
Well, I personally didn't think he was set up, and I did think he was capable of committing that crime because I had been keeping up with his abuse of Nicole through the National Enquirer as well as ABC
and
News.
I heard from reliable sources how abusive he was with the first wife.
And
also,
see, I didn't know that. I thought he and Marguerite were a very happy couple. And I thought he divorced her because the baby drowned while she had, you know, was at home with the baby, and OJ was out of town. So I just always thought that he never forgave her for what he perceived as negligence.
Well, that's probably true, too. I heard that he was abusive towards her. But it goes back to just because someone abuses someone, it doesn't make them a killer, you know?
That's very true because I watch all this investigation, discovery, and True TV and what have you. And a lot of times you think that that abusive perpetrator is the one that committed the murder, and a lot of times it's not.
Wow.
But I still think OJ had motive and opportunity.
Okay, because I don't know. Honestly, I know I loved him as a child and a teenager and up into the my 20s, but I don't know if OJ did it or not. So some people think that I think he didn't do it. I don't know. I'm like, you know, I always knew OJ had a hot temper just from watching him in sports. I've been a sports lover and watching him as a sports analyst. You know, but just because you have a hot temper, you know, everybody that played with him or watched him as a fan.